I knew all about Guy before I met him in person. I checked out his Facebook profile and studied his photos closely enough to figure that his condo was in a newly built tower attached to one of the converted warehouse buildings in the Mill District overlooking the river, where penthouse apartments sold for a million or more. Luxury pads that boasted intelligent and intuitively designed condos with timeless finishes, sweeping views of the river, and a 24-hour concierge in a boutique-style lobby. At that time, I was living paycheck to paycheck, teaching English lit at an alternative high school. Driving home every day from work, I crossed through the Mill District to get to my tiny upper floor, one bed, one bath, on the other side of the river. The wrong side. Next to the freight yards and abandoned cold storage plant. From my bedroom window, I could see those golden towers in the distance, and I'd imagine exactly where Guy was. I'd picture him, silhouetted against a wall of windows, the honeyed expanse of oak-timbered, brick-walled rooms spread out behind him. The heady promise of that vision kept me going, even though I was broke and barely able to scrape together next month's rent money. My only worldly possessions included a television on a $10 IKEA stand, a bed, a secondhand patio table with two mismatched metal chairs, a floor cushion for a sofa, and a closet full of cheap, untouched clothes, their tags dangling in a neat row. It was lunchtime when Guy and I met in person for the first time. The end of my grueling morning. My mouth watered at the thought of a peanut butter and banana sandwich waiting in the staff room fridge. Then the intercom crackled into action and the principal announced that there'd be an extended lunch period because of a high-priority professional development presentation. Attendance non-negotiable. I slammed down the pile of student writing journals, scattering them across the desk. I'd rather spend my lunch hour having my wisdom teeth pulled than listen to some earnest academic blather on about the educational process. Often the speakers were remote Ivy Tower types, usually failed classroom teachers totally unsuited to frontline work, who'd retreated to the quiet sanctuary of a university education department to avoid a nervous breakdown. Once they'd escaped the real gritty world of teaching, these academics thrived in peaceful isolation, cranking out research papers on student engagement, teacher charisma, self-determination, scaffolding, collaborating, integration, or any other buzzworthy topic of the day. The result? All of us miserable frontline teachers lived in a constant state of flux, at the mercy of the latest research findings, struggling to reinvent our teaching strategies like hamsters on a wheel, forever trying to catch up to the latest fad. But then I remembered. This presentation was different. Guy was today's speaker. Today I'd see him in the flesh instead of scouring all those Facebook posts. Heart thumping, I gathered up the journals into a pile and grabbed a couple to take with me. If all else failed, they'd distract me from the hungry rumbling in my gut. Robin, our principal, was British, an import from Cambridge, a dusty relic from the 60s hanging grimly onto the barest semblance of youth, with his diamond stud earrings, wispy strands of reddish-gray hair, and musty checkered shirts that smelled of old laundry. He walked around the school wearing granny glasses and bedroom slippers and sported a shark's tooth necklace he claimed was from his surfing days at Zuma Beach. Unable to afford the California lifestyle and keen to dodge the draft, he drifted up to the Midwest in the late 70s and found his niche in teaching. He eventually moved up the system to head the team at our alternative school, which he ran according to liberal 60s educational strategies. I'd been at the school for 6 years and loved it. It was a super relaxed place, teachers and students on a first-name basis, and courses that snailed on forever at the students' own pace. No deadlines, no lectures, plenty of interactive group projects, as well as a big emphasis on music and the arts, and a whole lot of feel-good self-esteem-building sessions. We took in the outsiders, the bullied, the disillusioned, and the disenfranchised. Kids would come into the classroom bruised, battered, and alienated by the regular school system. Nervous aggression coiled like a tight spring in their gut. But once they realized there were no tight-ass discipline freaks around, and they could work at a speed that suited their own individual needs, they usually settled into the calm daily routine without too much protest.